We're continuing with the Jewish home, Pirkei Avot, the first chapter, the fifth Mishnah. Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim Omer. Yossi ben Yochanan, the leader, the important man of Jerusalem, says, Yehi veitcha patuach lirvacha. Your house should be wide open. Like Avraham Avinu, his house was open in every direction, so guests could feel comfortable coming in. Viyu aniyim b'nei veitecha. And the poor should be comfortable coming to your home. Hire them. Hire them, and give them jobs, and that's the way. That's the highest level of tzedakah. Ve'al to besichai ma'isha, and don't have too much idle chatter with the woman. Be'ishtamu kal v'chomo be'isht chavero. They said it with regards to one's wife, even more so with your friend's wife. Mikanamucha chamim, our sages from here went on to say, kozman shadam al besichai ma'isha. When a person has too much idle chatter with the woman, goyim ra'al atzmo, he hurts himself. Uvoter midivrei Torah. He ends up wasting time from learning. Ultimately, he finds himself in perdition. So what's going on in the Mishnah? Let's see step by step. Step one, a person's house should be wide open. But you have to have doors in order for it to be wide open. Your house has to, you have to know when it's time to close the doors, when it's time to build internally. Yes, we have to have guests. Very important. But it's also important that we have a house to bring them into. Sometimes people open the doors wide open and there's no house. You end up having, you don't even have four walls. In order to have a house, you have to invest the time with your own family. Sometimes it means balancing things, that you have one meal that you do have guests, and one meal that you don't. Sometimes it means balancing Shabbatot. One Shabbos you do have guests, one Shabbos you don't. If you have sleepover guests, sometimes it's good to have them eat a meal out so that you have one meal privately with your own family. And if you have sleepover guests, very often it's good to have them sleep in someone else's house. They could eat by you, but maybe arrange different sleeping arrangements so that way you have some private time with your family. And if you can't do any of the above, so then you can't have guests every Shabbos. Some Shabbatot you have to invest internally. Couples need to have that private time together. Families need that private time together. So, Yehi betcha patoch levacha, your house should be wide open. When we lived in Kiryat Moshe, we would have guests over every Shabbos, but not every meal. Matzah Shabbos, we would have guys over to help us finish off the chillin, but not every Matzah Shabbos. Meaning this idea of having your house wide open also involves a certain balancing act so that you maintain a house. You maintain a relationship, and a relationship requires time. Time at the Shabbos table when there are other people present is not real time you've spent with your wife. It might be time you've spent with your kids, but your wife needs time to herself. One of the mistakes couples make, men make, specifically when they're engaged and then repeatedly when they're married, is that they think that, we'll take the classical scenario. They go to look at beds, they go to look at furniture, they go to look at cutlery, they go to look at all kinds of different things they need for post-wedding, and then they've just spent 3 hours doing that, and the husband has to get back to his work, to his learning, whatever he's doing. So he tells his wife, bye, and she goes, aren't we going to spend some time together? And he looks at her and says, we just spent 3 hours together. So I always say, sit down, get a popsicle stick, and sit down for 15 minutes for the sake of being together. Then you've spent time together. For men, if we've done something together, we've actually looked for stuff together, we've been trying to accomplish something together, that's called we spend time together. You can go shopping with your wife. You go looking for a dress. You spend all morning. You take the morning off of work. You spend 4 hours looking for that dress. You finish and she says, when are you going to spend time with me? And you look at her like she fell off the moon. Okay, now you learned. Those 4 hours don't count. But if you add 15 minutes where you tell her, I just want to sit down and have some quality time with you. You sit down, you buy 3 rugelach, and now you've had a morning together. It's a world of a difference. We don't work that way. For men, two guys can get together and say, let's get together. Great. They sit down, listen to a lecture together. Each one's eating their popcorn together. They get up and say, that was great. Great seeing you. Bye. Great. Men had bonding time together. But you didn't say a word to one another. It doesn't matter. We learned together. We spent the time together. We're connected. Women, you got to sit down and talk to me. But we spoke about what we were buying. No, you didn't talk to me. 15 minutes. Take those 15 minutes, and the whole morning looks different. And men will repeat this mistake throughout their lives. And there's this constant frustration. So a man could tell his wife, whatever I do isn't good enough. I took those 4 hours this morning and you're still not happy. And she looks at him and she says, you don't understand. And he goes, right. I don't understand. So now you've learned, now you understand. Take those 15 minutes and the whole 4 hours will look different. You've spent time together. For women, the time you spend doing something is not called spending time together. So if you were at the Shabbos table and together you hosted a Shabbaton for Machon Meir and you hosted 15 guests and you feel like we did something together, it's great. And to her, that's not it. No. If there's no one else in the house and you prepared Shabbos together, maybe that's considered quality time for her, that you did something together. Maybe. Maybe. And still, you would be wise at the end of that time to ask her if maybe we could take 5 minutes just to sit down together. Now, this is very counterintuitive to men. Because from men's perspective, we just spent too much time together. I just invested those 2 hours. I really had things to do. I helped around the house. Goodbye. And you're ready to pack out of there. No. Force yourself. Come and you initiate. Maybe we'll spend 5-10 minutes together before I have to go. It's a world of a difference. Sometimes walking her to the bus stop. You guys went and did something together. You walk her to the bus stop. It's not only about being a gentleman. It's about giving her that feeling. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, when he would have guests, he would walk them outside and stand there and wave as the car left. And that's such a different feeling if your host leaves you off at the door and rushes back to what he's doing. So then you're not sure if you were a nuisance. Or if he walks you out and stands there and waves, you get that feeling, ah, they really enjoyed the time they spent with me. That extra minute makes a world of a difference. You walk away with a different feeling. So, number one, we learned in the Mishnah, Yivetcha Patoch Levacha, your house should be wide open. We should have a welcoming home. We should have a home that takes in guests. But we have to have a home, which means we have to invest time and quality time together. And sometimes that means we have to invest the time as focused time just for the sake of being together. Number two, V'yu aniyim b'nei v'techa. Give the poor work in your home. And yet Chazal said, be careful. Even Potiphar, who hired Yosef, so he had a very pious servant in his house. Our sages say, look what ended up happening with Yosef and Potiphar's wife. They were a second away from sin, and Yosef was perfectly prepared to do it. And then he saw his father's vision, and he said, no, I can't do it. But he was prepared. He came home with the wrong intent. So our sages said, don't leave a man in the house all the time. Don't leave a butler in charge in the house. You're supposed to be the one in charge. Okay. So, yiyu aniyim nevetecha. On the one hand, the Mishnah says, give them work in your home. Give them parnasa. That's the highest level of charity when you give a person work. The flip side of it is that it's one thing to hire a plumber. It's another thing to hire a butler. Chazal instructed us not to have a steady man in the house. It's not healthy for the running of the house. Ve'alto besichai ma'isha. Our sages warned about not having too much conversation with the woman. Ah, that's not what it says. Not having too much idle chatter. Sicha. It doesn't say don't talk to her. It says sicha. Sicha is idle chatter. It's talk that's not focused, that's not for the sake of anything but talk. So whenever the Mishnah says al terbe or mi'ut, we have a comment of the Gra. The Gra says it means a certain amount is necessary. Don't go beyond that amount, but a certain amount is necessary. Meaning your wives will need a certain amount of talk for the sake of talk. So if you want to make your wife happy, sit down for a conversation with her and talk to her about that. About what, you'll ask? And I said, about that. What is that? Oh, that really doesn't matter. Just talk. Let the conversation meander. Let it go aimlessly about, and when you can give her a half hour, 45 minutes of that, you've shown her you love her. Now, you're a man. I remember when we were first married, my wife invited a few of her friends for Shabbos meal, and after they left, my wife said, you were so reticent, I never saw you so quiet at the table. And I said, well, I was paying attention to the conversation, and I could never figure out what the subject was. I had nothing intelligent to say because I never knew what the subject was. You kept going from subject to subject to subject. And that's how you and your friends were talking. And I kept watching this ping pong and I couldn't figure out what are they talking about. 1 second I thought you were talking about one thing. A second later you were talking about something else. I didn't know, so I had nothing to say. So I just sat quietly listening. What can I say? So women's conversation goes that way. It frustrates men. Because we'll come home and we want to share something with our wives, and right away they switch the subject on us. Because that's the way women listen. They're active listeners. Men are passive listeners. You see, you're all sitting here quiet. If this was a woman's class, everyone would have their hands up, and they'd have examples, and they'd be asking things, and is this like that, and don't you mean that? And within 5 seconds, we'd be off topic. But women do that. That's how the conversation goes. And when men come and they want to talk to their wives, so they're frustrated. Why can't you listen? And the wife is frustrated, and she says, you just want to lecture. And the man is frustrated. I don't want to lecture. I just want to share something with you. So she says, I'm listening. And he says, but if you're listening, why do you keep taking the conversation off to tangents? And she says, it's just connected. I'm just mentioning that. I'm listening. I'm an active listener. So that frustrates men. So that's one thing. In conversation, Chazal said, a certain amount of idle chatter is necessary. How much? As much as you both need. There's a certain amount that you need. There's a certain amount that she needs. That's called the right amount. Whatever she needs and you need. Now, in conversation, so the truth is we have like 10 classes about conversation in marriage, because conversation is really the key vehicle to connecting with our spouse. It's conversation. That's the key point in marriage, the key point in creating a relationship is conversation. And we don't understand one another. We completely don't understand one another. So that if a woman comes to her, a husband brings home flowers Friday afternoon, and his wife says, we're running such a tight budget. Why do you do that? Do me a favor. Don't ever buy me flowers again. I told you last week we had for it. I told you the week before. And he says, yeah, but I was so excited. I saw those gorgeous flowers, and the first thing I thought about was you, and I want to bring it home for you. And she says, that's so sweet. Don't do it again. So what do husbands do, and I've seen this numerous times, they never buy a flower again. How did I see this? Because I was once a bachelor, believe it or not, and when I was invited for a Shabbos meal, so being a good American boy learning in Israel, I knew part of being a polite host guest was to bring flowers or a bottle of wine, so I'd bring flowers. And every so often, I'd see this reticent look. I'd see this like embittered look on the husband's face when I brought flowers. And the wife would go, that was so nice. And every so often, I'd actually get to hear the tail end of the story. Like when the husband would say, I don't do that anymore. And the wife says, yeah, he'll never buy me flowers again. And he'll say, yeah, you told me not to. Now, when I heard this once, I thought it was strange. When I heard it the second time, I thought it was doubly strange. When I heard it the third time, I started realizing there's something going on here. And then I started seeing that this is a recurring theme. How many times does a husband wash the floor and his wife comes in and she's all frustrated? Remind me never to ask you for your help again. Remind me never to ask you to wash the floor again. Can't you wash behind the doors? You have to wash everywhere but behind the doors? Come on. Remind me never to ask you again. So us being simple men, the next time she asks us to wash the floor, we are so hurt by that comment, we did the best we could. But she said that. So you hear it once and you try to swallow your pride. You hear it a second time. By the third time, you say, fine, you got it, no problem. Next time you come home, you say, gee, you're so overworked. I wish I could help. And she says, well, what's left to do for Shabbos? We've got to clean the floors. We've got to do the dishes. We've got to set the table. And you go, okay, I'll set the table and I'll do the dishes. And she says, and what about the floor? And you go, you asked me to remind you. Never asked me to do it again. Right? We're simple men. She said I should remind her three times. So you asked I should remind her. I'm reminding you. And then she gets all upset. So what does the man do? He looks at her and says, what are you upset about? You told me I should remind you. You said it once. You said it twice. You said it a third time. The first two times I didn't listen. This time I listened. I reminded you. Okay, I'm not doing it again.
Sometimes you don't. You're not supposed to listen.
So the key here isn't you're not supposed to listen.
Flowers once a month.
The key here is to know how to listen. So if she said, remind me to never again ask you to do the floor, what she meant to say is, I'm very upset. So for a man, when a man says, I don't want to talk to you for a week, he means, I don't want to talk to you for a week. When a woman says, I don't want to talk to you for a week, she means, I'm very upset and in about a minute I want to talk to you. We speak differently and we express ourselves differently. So there was once a couple who were happily married, and he adored her, and she couldn't have kids. And one day she comes up to him and she says, give me kids or else life is just not worth living. I wish I were dead. And what does he say to her? He says to her, am I God? It's you can't have kids. I have kids from my other wife. You got a medical problem. Who is this person? Yaakov Avinu. Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu comes to Yaakov. And what does she say? Havaliv Vanim. Give me kids. And if not, I'm as good as dead. What does Yaakov answer her? Hatachat Elokim Anochi. Am I instead of God? Do I control things here? Ashamana Mimech Privaten. God withheld you from kids. I have kids. I have kids from my other wives. You have a problem. Hashem is the one to talk to. So Chazal say, Chazal hold Yaakov accountable for it. Chazal say that's not the way to answer. The Chazal say that's one of the reasons why all the brothers bowed to Yosef, because Yaakov spoke improperly to Yosef's mother. So Hashem said, you'll still see. All those other kids will come bowing to her kid. But it sounds simple. Yet when we're there in that melodramatic moment where the woman is saying things that to our male ear sounds extreme, like, remind me never again to ask you, or you went and you bought a whole long shop, your wife asked you for a whole list of things to buy, and you did it, but you bought the wrong margarine, or you bought the wrong detergent, and you come home, and your wife looks at everything you bought, and that one item which you forgot, or got the wrong one, and she looks at it and says, don't you know we don't use that margarine here? And you look at it and say, I changed my schedule. I looked very hard to get everything right. And I got one thing wrong. I just spent 2 hours going through the store, standing in line, and all you can say is I got the margarine wrong? Male.
I'm sorry.
You're not sorry. That's the fact. You are male and you are not sorry. You are thinking, what difference does it make if I got the wrong margarine? I just got the whole list. I just spent 2 hours doing this. So we will talk about why men lie, a different class. That's a whole separate story. But we have to know how to hear. The truth is, if I were talking to women, then I would talk about the other side of the coin, that they have to understand what's happening when a man does things and what the man is hearing, and that when the man buys that whole grocery list, he has 500 items over there. Every single Cheerio says, I love you on it. But the woman doesn't see it that way. We talk a different language. Go explain to a woman that when you stood there in line, every minute you're standing in line because you loved her. And every item you bought, you felt like you just went all out just for her. To her mind, this had to get done, and it didn't get done right, and now it's going to cost me a load of work, and now she's going to talk about the one thing that didn't work out right because she's very focused on that. Again, if I were talking to women, they don't understand the male emotion in shopping and hearing you got something wrong. This goes back to another discussion of how we converse. There are many things that women say that really revolve around the question, do you love me? Like the question, are you going to join me to, are you going to walk me to the bus stop? Or the question of what would you like for dinner? Or how do I look in this outfit? They're all really the same question. Do you love me? There are many conversations where the man doesn't hear it. She puts on something and says, how do I look in this? And you say, you look better in green. And she would just ask, do you love me? And you answered, you look better in green. She asked, are you going to walk me to the bus stop? And you answered, you know, I have a bus to make. I'm not going to be able to do that this morning. Do you love me? Tomorrow. You know, we don't hear the question, right? So we give the wrong answer. So this is an instance where the woman doesn't hear the sentence right, and she gives her answer. When a man walks in and he just did the shop, he's walking in with 5 bags that say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. But she doesn't hear it. That's not what she hears. She sees something very simple. I do the shop, and when a woman does the shop, she does not feel that way. That's not her expression. To her, this is just a part of keeping the house running. So then she looks at the man, and she's thinking, like, what are you making such a big deal about? I do this all the time, and it's not such a big deal, but you did it wrong, and now it's going to be more work for me. We're speaking a different language here. But coming, we're talking a totally different language. They don't even understand what we're saying when we do the shop. They don't see that. You buy milk and bread, and you come home, and you're the caveman. You just went out and beat the beast, and you brought home food and milk for your family. You're feeling great. And it could be just milk and bread, but that's the way a man feels when he brings it through the door. I am putting food on the table. We don't word it that way, and we don't think of it that way, but deep down inside, that's what most men think when they're bringing home the bread and milk, and it doesn't matter what, but the bread and milk, he brings it home. And when she looks at it and she says, you know, sliced bread is easier for making the kids' sandwiches, and it's more cost-effective, because right now we're going to slice it. We're not going to get all the slices we need, so maybe we should get another loaf of bread. What she says is, sliced bread is more practical. What the man hears is, you don't love me, you didn't get me what I needed. And the man is all frustrated, and the woman doesn't understand. Why are you all frustrated? All I said was, next time get the sliced bread. This is going to be much harder work. But she didn't hear what he was saying there. But coming back to here, we don't hear them. When they come in and they say, give me kids or I'm dead, or when they come in and say, don't ever buy me flowers again, what we're hearing is, don't ever buy me flowers again. So there was once a couple where they got into a fight. They said things they shouldn't have said. And at one point, she said to him, I hate you. And he looked back at her and said, and I hate you. And she looked at him and said, you brute, how could you talk to me that way? That's inhumane. And he says, wait a second, you said it first. And she says, but you meant it. And she's right. Because when she says it, she means, I'm upset. But when he says it, us simple men, when we say it, we mean it. It's very simple. When they say it, they don't mean it.
So should we do the whole translation on it, and we have a bags of groceries put on there, I love you, I love you, I love you?
Put them on this glass. Let them hear this. The classes are shifting. For the first 10 years I was giving this class, it was all focused on the men, or 8 years, 7 years, whatever. The first seven series was all focused on what you guys have to hear. Over time, women started listening to this class, coming back to their men saying, listen to that, right? So I'm starting to incorporate a little bit more of what the women have to hear, because they also, they don't understand our language either. It's a two-way street. We don't talk the same language. So Chazal said, "Al terbe sichay ma'isha." When we speak about sicha, first of all, we're talking about idle chatter. Idle chatter is a critical component in marriage. Women need a certain time of just free speech with their husband. Chazal said, "Don't do that more than necessary." What's more than necessary? Whatever you need, whatever she needs, that's okay. When it's just shooting the breeze, you got nothing to do. You come home from work at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you got nothing better to do for the next 8 hours. You're just going to sit there talking about nothing. That's a waste of time, and that's wrong. And it's going to lead to improper conversation and improper conclusions. That's what Chazal said, al tarbeh. Within our conversation, there's a lot of learning to do. We speak different languages. Women's expressions reflect their feeling, but they cannot be taken literally. When a woman says, I never want to go out again, many couples find that when they're about to go out on a trip, they're about to go out on a date, the woman's about to go to mikveh. Anytime Friday afternoon, the couple's about to get together again. Anytime there's about to be unity, the couple's about to reunite, their anniversary's coming up, they're about to go out, most couples will find that suddenly, instead of getting closer towards that moment, they get further apart. How many women say, I can't remember the last time I went to mikveh without tears in my eyes? How many women say, I can't remember the last time I went into Shabbos and we weren't fighting? How many husbands say, thank God, Kabbalah Shabbos is a time I could calm down before I have to face my wife again after all the yelling that was going on Friday afternoon? Why? So on a spiritual level, our sages say that before our neshamas come close, the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, does his utmost to get us apart. But there's another reason. There are other reasons for it. We don't know how to hear what they're saying. They want to see more feeling, more emotion, more positive empathy towards that moment. And we become super practical towards that moment. Okay, what needs to get done? They get super uptight towards that moment. We don't understand what they're uptight about. We're just, things are about to be great. What are you all uptight about? We're about to go out on a date. Right, but did we take care of the babysitter? Did we take care of all the practical aspects? So men get very frustrated. Then women get very frustrated. And boom, suddenly you have a line like, forget it, let's not go out tonight. And what does the husband say?
No problem.
If it's the first time, he says, okay, I'll go, I'll take a double portion, and I'll tell you what the food was like. Okay, that's eventually he learns that this happens very often. And then he learns to ignore it. But if he's smart, then he starts learning that she's expressing something. She's very frustrated. She's very bothered. She does not mean, let's not go out tonight. And when you end the date and then she comes home and there's a pile of dishes and you forgot to offer to help and there's a whole bunch of other things to do when you come home and then she says, remind me never to go out with you again. So what does the man say here? Okay, next time, next anniversary, I'm going to tell her that. Let me write this down. Can I record you, honey? Right? Mail. So, simple. So direct.
So who are you going to go out with if you don't go out with me?
It's a good point,
but,
right?
But I think, I don't know whose class it was. Don't ever, when you're fighting, don't ever bring up the D word because that's the end of marriage.
Okay, it's another good point, right?
Yeah, for
sure.
Don't ever bring up the divorce word because that's the end of the marriage.
I wouldn't say that's on the marriage. I'd say it's a dangerous catalyst.
Well,
yes.
Because sometimes you're joking around, you don't mean it, but she doesn't hear it that way.
Okay. So we're in the middle of the Mishnah. Let's finish the Mishnah. Mikan amru chachamim, from here our sages taught, kozman shadam harbe sichah im ha'isha gorem ra la'atzmo. So there's one other point here. Our sages say don't have too much idle chatter with a woman. Your wife, certainly your friend's wife. Which brings us to another point. Your friend's wife. What relationship are you supposed to have with your friend's wife? So, I had a very nice lesson when I was in the yeshiva Torah B'Tzion. The Rosh Yeshiva once asked me to print out something for the shir. And he said, please give it upstairs. So he said, please give it upstairs. I asked him, you mean I should give it to Rachel? I wasn't sure what he was saying. So he said, who's Rachel? I said, the secretary. And he said to me, and why do you know her first name? I was taken back for a second. And I said, you know what? He's right. He's right. Why should I know her first name? Out of modesty, I should call her Mrs. Cohen. I should not call her by her first name. He's right. And that was, I was so appreciative that he said that to me. So I said, Rachel, and he was like, why do you know that? Why is that relevant? She has a first name, but you're married. It happens to be she wasn't. But you shouldn't be on a first name basis with her. So Chazal told us when it comes to our friend's wife, so he just asked the question, but that was enough. I learned the lesson. Chazal told us, a person has to think and be careful when it comes to his friend's wife. So he shouldn't have idle chatter. Certainly, I don't see any reason why on Facebook people have female friends. You're married, you have a wife that should be your only female friend. And then people go on chat groups and they have all these conversations with women. It could be the neighbor's wife, it could be someone else's wife, it could be another woman. But why are we chatting with women? Chazal gave us good advice. And this is an area where you cannot be too careful. Realistically, we're all human. And Chazal spend pages in Tractate Kiddushin telling us stories about great men who were tempted. Chazal tell us the story of Rav Amram Chasida. Maybe we should take a few minutes to discuss a few stories. Yeah? Let's see the Gemara. Do we have a Kiddushin here? No, we don't have a kiddush. Okay, so I'll do some at the heart. You have a kiddush in there? Okay.
Want me to look in the library?
Nah. That could be.
No stories in Sanhedrin?
There are many stories in Sanhedrin, yeah. You see a kiddush in there?
What about vice versa?
Same thing?
No, it's not like the same.
Right. No, it's the same thing. Women and men, women should have female friends and men should have male friends. Before I entered the rabbinate in Kochav Yaakov, I had a policy that if a woman emailed me more than 3 times personal questions, so then I would write back to her I see that she has good questions, and as such, I'll be happy to match her up with a rabbanit who she could ask her questions to. One question I could take, 2 questions I could take, by the time it reached 3 questions, I say, okay, you have questions, that's great. let's set you up with a rabbanit who could help you and guide you, and you could ask her your questions. You have a kiddushin, yeshar koach. In Kochav Yaakov, so they know that I have a rule. If a woman wants to, she can ask questions over the phone, but if a woman wants to meet, it's either with my wife in the room or with their husband in the room or in a public place. Like, a person has to, and that's only because I don't have a choice. When possible, I redirect, let them ask someone else. So the Gemara gives us, we have a mission in the end of Tractate Kiddushin that says a young man should not teach young children because their mothers bring them and they'll end up being there alone with him if he's the kindergarten teacher. So we have the Mishnayot all about Yichud. The mission in the end of Tractate Kiddushin discusses the different laws of Yichud. So, the Gemara says, "Ma yitonen adam chai geber al chataav." The verse says, a person, when he's living, could be at a state of weeping, and even then, it could be in the middle of a levaya. It could be his dead relative is lying there before him. His desire can still take note of the women in the funeral. You think it's a moment where you're very focused. The Gemara says, no, that's the way a human being is, that at every moment his yeter is relevant. The Gemara brings a story that when it comes to Yichud, we sometimes say that two men with one woman, that's not Yichud. So the Gemara says it has to be pious, righteous, upright men. Because if it's not upright men, there was a story where a woman wanted to cheat on her husband. So she made up with 10 men that they're going to go out and party. So they put out word in the city that she died. And then they took her out in a casket. And then they went out to the woods and did what they did. So the Talmud says that, and everyone here was party to that story, meaning she wanted to cheat on her husband, they wanted to cheat with her. And the Gemara says, here you see, 10 people, one woman, they all went and did what they wanted to do. So the Gemara says the fact that Yichud, when you have two men, there's no Yichud, it has to be two upright men. I said that I think that from this Gemara we see that if a woman or a man walks into a bar, so there's a problem of Yichud, because there are some bars where everything goes and people do whatever they want in the side rooms. No one's embarrassed from anyone. So the Talmud says that when you're in a location where people are not embarrassed, they're not upright citizens, so they're not embarrassed from one another, there you have a problem of Yichud. You can't say there are other men present. So what? No one's embarrassed from anyone. It's like those 10 guys who all went and cheated with a woman. So committed adultery. So that's the Talmud then gives us a bunch of stories. Let's see, where... Story number one. It says that there was once a woman who was taken into captivity. And the rabbis went, and they brought her back from the pirates, and they were on the way to bring her home, and it came nightfall. So they said, where are we going to leave this young girl? So they brought her to the house of Rav Amram, who was known as Rav Amram Chasida, Rav Amram the pious one. And they put her up in the attic, and she was a very good-looking girl, and they took away the ladder. Now, the ladder, it took 10 people to carry that ladder. It was a very heavy ladder. And at one point, she walked by the entrance to the attic, and Rav Amram caught a glimpse of her. And Rav Amram, who was an old man, a pious man, got so excited, the Talmud says, he went and lifted that ladder that took 10 people to lift, brought it to the attic, and started climbing the ladder. And he's halfway up the ladder, and he looks up at her, and he looks at himself, and he starts yelling, there's a fire in the house of Amram, there's a fire in the house of Amram. So everyone came, it's the middle of the night, he's yelling, there's fire, fire. So they all come, and they see him, and the ladder's there, and he's halfway up the ladder, and the rabbis all see him, and they figure out what happened. And they said, Rebbe, you embarrassed us. They meant to say, aren't you embarrassed? You embarrassed us, you know. And Rav Amram said, better I get embarrassed in this world, and you're all embarrassed that I'm your teacher here, because here I publicized myself, rather than sin, then you should come to the world to come and suddenly discover I'm a cheat, I'm not what you thought I was, and will be embarrassed there. So here you see, he was pious. He had the nickname Amram Chasida. That means he was pious. Pious people have a Yetzer too. We think if you're pious, so then you're beyond that. No, you're not. The Talmud is very clear. I gave you one story. The Talmud gives us many stories. I'll skip a bunch of stories. There's another very interesting story on the next page. It says like this. Rav Chiya Bar Ashi. Every day he would do tachanon, he would go down, he would say, may the merciful one save us from the Yetzer Hara. So he was already an old man, and his wife, one day she hears him praying, Harachaman Yatzileinu Miyetzer Hara, may the merciful one save us from our evil inclination. So she says, gee, it's been years since he's been intimate with me. He's such an old man. Why does he say that every day? May the merciful one save us from the Yetzer Hara. So she couldn't figure it out. One day, he was reviewing his learning in the garden, and she got all dressed up, and he's reviewing his learning, and she walks in front of him, and she walks back, and he's focused on his learning. And then, at one point, she's walking back and forth, and he sees this woman who keeps walking back and forth in front of him. She wanted to see, will I catch his attention? So she got all dressed up. She put on her best clothing, her best perfume, and everything. So he looks up, and he sees her, and he says, who are you? So she says, I am the woman of ill repute named Churta. I just got back to town. So he says, are you available? So she says, I'm yours. So they go into the house and they do what they do. And I skipped one part of the story. She said, but there's one condition. You see that flower on top of the palm tree? If you pick me that flower, then I'm yours. So even though he was an old man, he ran, climbed the palm tree. Now palm trees have no branches. Climbed to the top. Brought it to her. And then they went and did what they did. So, he didn't know it was his wife. Okay? He goes and does his thing. She gets back into her regular clothing. He comes back home. And she's trying to light the oven. So he goes and he sits in the oven. And she says to him, what are you doing? So he said to her, I have to confess. Here's what happened. I was learning, and I suddenly look up, and there was this gorgeous woman there, and I asked her, and she told me who she was, and I made a mistake. That's why I'm sitting in the oven, because this is where I'm headed. I'm going to be burnt. You know what I did? She says to him, it was me. So he looks at her, and he says, no. So she says, right? She says, no, I'm serious. It was me. And he goes, I'm serious. It wasn't you. And they're standing there having this argument until she says, I'll prove it to you. I'll tell you what happened. And she starts telling him pretty intimate details. And he says, right? So he says to her, but I'll tell you the truth. You tricked me, but I meant to do something that was wrong. And it says from that day onward, he fasted the rest of his life. He would eat small meals at night and fast all his days until he passed away. For the rest of his life, he fasted because he said, I meant to sin. I did not mean to be with my wife. I didn't know it was you. So he felt so bad. He said he has to repent because he intended to transgress. The Talmud tells us stories about big people. Rav Chiya Bar Ashi is a big person. He's quoted in Halacha throughout the Shas. You're talking about the leaders of the Jewish people. We have the story of David HaMelech. The story, the Talmud tells a story after story. It says Rabbi Meir used to tell his family, don't leave me alone with my daughter. Rabbi Meir, you know who big Rabbi Meir is? All our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. He's among the biggest rabbis that ever lived. But Rabbi Meir was honest. So why did he say it? Because he said, I can't control my desires. I can't control if I have a desire for this person or that person. If I recognize that this is a weakness I have, so part of taking control of my desires is being honest with them.
Telling somebody about Rabbi Meir, is that your definition
for it? I don't think so. If the Talmud tells it to us. But give me a minute. Let's finish the thought. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that we learn from these stories. The Talmud mentions them so that a person will know to take control of themselves. If a person sees he has a desire for something prohibited, he shouldn't tell himself, ah, don't worry about it. He should say, okay, let me see how it happens. Let me see how I take care of it. Rabbi Tarfon, the great Rabbi Tarfon, tremendously pious, he used to say, don't leave me alone with my daughter-in-law. So one of the students made fun of him. He said, look at the rabbi. And then a short time passed, and they discovered that that student ended up transgressing with his mother-in-law. So our sages said a person has to be honest. We don't choose what desires we have. We have to ensure that we take control of the desires we have in a minute. And part of taking control is putting up the fences to ensure we don't fall. I once had a friend who told me he needed a new secretary. So I said to him, could you tell me what you're looking for? So he said to me, yes, someone middle-aged and up. I was very impressed. He said, I don't want a young secretary in the office. I want a secretary that's middle-aged and up, which was a modest way of saying, I'm not looking for a model. On the contrary, why should I do that to myself? So a person has to be realistic. The Talmud was realistic. And when the Mishnah says, be careful about how much conversation you have with your friend's wife, so there's normal and then there's immodest. And as we sensitize ourselves, we learn how to be careful. In the office setting, you have to look at a screen together with a coworker, and she's female. So today you could share, you're on your computer, she's on her computer. Why should two people have their heads so close together? You can look together without being so close to someone else. I said this in a shir 2 years ago, and the men in the shir were up in arms. They argued with me for about 15 minutes after the shir. And then they came back to me as the weeks passed by, not here in Palmyra, somewhere else, and they told me, you know, we found ways to institute it in our offices, and it is nicer, it is more correct. We can look at the same screen. Today it's so easy. You have free screen viewers. You have free programs that allow you to share screens. Why not do it? The Mishnah says, when it comes to your friend's wife, be careful how much conversation that's irrelevant. You know, we're not supposed to ask, how are you? Send regards to your wife. We're supposed to be modest. So you say, yeah, today, good morning, today, how are you, has become irrelevant and impersonal. But there's a how are you, and there's a how are you. Right? Okay, and again, a person should try to shift himself in the direction of modesty. A person can ask, how are things going, instead of asking, how are you? How is the family? How is everyone? There are other ways of saying it. So the Mishnah warns us, a person has to think and be careful about the modesty between himself and his friend's wife. What did we learn today? We learned about having an open home. We learned about the importance of ensuring that there is a home. There has to be time that's left to the family. We learned about having poor people and giving them a job, and that's the highest of the 10 levels of tzedakah. And we learned about Chazal's warning not to have a steady man in your house. Even though it's out of kindness, you're giving him a job, there should not be a steady man that's a steady in the house. Chazal say even Yosef and Potiphar's wife would not have happened had Potiphar not given Yosef a steady job in the house where his wife was present. Our sages warned us that a person has to be careful with his chatter with his wife, and we discussed the gra and the two applications of the Mishnah. We said on the one hand, a woman needs a certain amount of time where you have aimless chatter between the two of you. We said often men will take time together with their kala or their wife, doing purposeful things, and the woman feels like they didn't have quality time together. That's where this Mishnah comes in. There's a certain amount of time that a wife needs of time together without a goal. Let's just spend time together. We said in communication, there are points that we don't understand one another. Women will sometimes say things that are melodramatic. They will sometimes say things that we hear literally, but they didn't mean them literally. We gave the example of Rachel telling Yaakov, "I wish I were dead." We gave the example of a woman saying, "Never buy me flowers again." We gave the example of a woman saying, "I don't want to go on the date tonight," or "Never ask me out again," or "Remind me never to ask you to wash the floor again." We discussed that men also have forms of conversation that women don't understand. When a man does the shopping, she doesn't understand how much love is invested in that shopping. But coming back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah warns us there's a certain amount of idle chatter that's necessary for the man, necessary for the woman, and beyond that is hurtful to the marriage. Idle chatter. Necessary talk, there's no limit on. Idle chatter, there's a certain amount that's necessary, and more than that is harmful to oneself and to one's marriage. Our sages said, when it comes to our friend's wife, there we have to be more concerned. We discussed the Talmud in Tractate Kiddushin. We discussed that yichud, when you have two people, then you do not have yichud, but that's only if the two people are righteous, pious people. And if those two people are like those 10 folks over there who went and sinned with the married woman, so then it doesn't matter how many people are present. We said that there are some types of bars where it doesn't matter if there are 100 people, there's yichud in that bar, because what's going on in the side room, so then it doesn't matter that people are present. That doesn't preclude yichud. Another example of that would be a drive-in theater. There are parking lots where everyone knows that all kinds of things are going on. No one's embarrassed of the next guy. So it doesn't matter that other people are present. It's yichud to be there alone. And then we discussed the Talmud that gives us stories about men who said, "Don't leave me alone." Rabbi Meir said with his daughter. Rabbi Tarfon said with his daughter-in-law. The Aruch HaShulchan said they came to teach us that we don't have a choice what desires Hashem implants within us. We have a responsibility to take control of those desires and ensure that we don't transgress because of the desires. We learned the story of Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, who mistook his wife for Harta, that woman of ill repute. And we learned the story of Rav Amram Chasida and the girl from captivity. And now Rav Amram called out and said, "There's a fire in the house." He said, "Better I not be embarrassed in the world to come." And with that, we've basically concluded the Mishnah, which discusses both having an open home, and we mentioned having a home, giving the poor a job in your home. And we discussed being careful of the modesty between men and women that way, and being careful how much idle chatter we have. And we discussed the importance of having idle chatter and yet keeping it in check.